join us today. My name is Daniel Cavanaugh, and I'm here with my dad, Charles. This is Crosstalk, the gospel for today and beyond. We're in pursuit of growing in our understanding of the gospel and discovering what it means to transfer to the next generation. And faith has been our topic for the last, starting last week, and is going to be our topic for the next couple weeks, in just dealing with this idea of what is faith. What does that mean, even in the context of our postmodern culture, which just really has destroyed the meaning of faith? And so for us as evangelicals who believe in faith alone, that very foundational doctrine, it's good to take some time and just kind of define that and what it looks like, both on a theological level and on a practical level. And we all know that works don't save us, but the question begs to be asked, do works have any place in salvation, or is it, or in our faith, I should say? So that's kind of what we want to talk about today. Does our works, or do our works,
what
I should say,
what is the relevance?
Have any place in faith?
Right. Are they relevant at all?
Right.
Yeah. So because if we're not careful, we can slip into an antinomianism, which basically is an attitude that says it doesn't matter what we do.
Right.
Because since we're saved by faith, and after we're saved, it doesn't matter at that point because we're saved anyway, so it doesn't matter.
And we don't want to be there. We want to biblically define this, and I think really what we want to do today is we want to talk about three things that will help us kind of walk us through this issue. One is defining works-based religion, so we understand what that is. Then the place of work in salvation.
Right.
Okay. Is there a place for that? Okay.
Right.
And then, which is kind of the overarching question that we're asking right now. And then, number three, the subtle deception of human works.
Right.
Now, it seems like we've just contradicted ourselves by saying all three of those, but I think as we walk through them, it'll become clear what we're trying to accomplish here. So, defining works-based religion, what is it?
Right. Well, I was looking at Isaiah 30 and verses 1 through following, and Isaiah describes a situation there. In the midst of his prophecy, he gets some historical dialogue here, some historical narrative here, and Jerusalem was under siege by Sennacherib's army. They've been given all these ultimatums, and it's a pretty frightening situation because it looked like they were going to be destroyed. They didn't have any hope. So now they've got to come up, what are we going to do? How are we going to respond? And in chapter 30, the Lord responds to the counselors that Hezekiah had that were giving him counsel. What we see here, and you say, well, what's this got to do with salvation? It has everything to do with the attitude toward God, and that's where it comes into play. Because God first accuses those who, in verse 1, he accuses those who say they have a plan. He says, but it's not my plan. And in fact, their plan is just going to add sin to more sin.
Right.
It's going to compound their sin problem. It's not going to help. And then he talks about woe to those who go to look for Egypt's help. Where Egypt's house is worthless. The tendency is to look to some human agent, you know, to help us out of our ditch here.
But this is not a problem that's just remained to some Old Testament story that we find in the scriptures, in which, you know, Hezekiah obviously is looking for counselors and he's looking for. We see this in both Adam and Eve,
right?
The Tower of Babel,
right?
I mean, it's kind of consistent with where. We see that since the beginning of time till now, maybe we've just become more sophisticated in it now.
I think so.
More modernized. Modernity has given us more ways to reject God, more philosophies and ways to
come. And more good
come.
Stuff that people have done, man has done, to
Absolutely.
Find merit in. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so what I think we're dealing with is at the core is rejecting God, and if I'm wrong here, rejecting God as the supreme ruler.
Yeah, and in that passage in verse 11, God talked about how they leave the path, leave the way and turn aside from the path. Now, what was that path? That path was a way of looking to and following God alone. And so when he comes to the end of it, he comes to verses 15 and 18, he says, "Well, thus says the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning in rest you will be saved. In quietness and in confidence you will be under, shall be your strength. And you would not rest in me." And then verse 18, "And therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious to you, and therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all those who wait for him." So he is, in this passage, contrasting the concept of trust against the concept of works, concept of faith, looking to God, his mercy, and his grace, instead of relying on their own human resources. And that's the whole problem when it comes to a works-based religion. It trusts human resources, and that is the deadly part of it.
Boiling it down, we basically say works-based religion is looking to myself and what I can do to save
me. Right.
And it will manifest itself in a lot of different ways.
Right.
Obviously, the Israelites are a prime example of that. They,
right.
in some ways, write the textbook on how to come to God in their own way,
right.
supposedly.
Right.
Now, Hezekiah obviously was a man who was faithful for most of his life.
Right.
But at the same time, even he struggled with that.
Yeah, even at the close of his life he did.
Yeah, and so what we're looking here is that defining works-based religion is basically saying, I know how to come to God, or in the case of the atheist, we can accomplish this in ourselves. But at the core, it's the same thing. It's rejecting
it's
God as
what
supreme
I can
ruler.
Do.
Right, I can do this, not God.
I have merit.
Yeah, and there's no concept of we have offended a holy God.
Right.
So, we define works-based religion. Now, question is, which is kind of our overarching question, is there a place for works and salvation at all?
Yeah, what's the relevance of works then? Because if we're not careful, then people say it doesn't matter what I do. And there's some people who do that.
Yeah.
You have out there, even in evangelicalism, those who will say, well, we don't believe in so-called lordship salvation. We believe once saved, always saved. And therefore, if you're saved, it doesn't matter what you do after that, you're still saved. Well, it might sound like a little turn on words and phrases, but we see in Scripture two things. One is that salvation is completely accomplished without works. And we see that, first of all, in the words of Christ himself on the cross. When he
right.
finished his work, for our salvation, he said, it is finished, it is accomplished, it is paid in full, stamped, paid, done. Nothing else can be added to that. Works adds to that, if we're saying works bring about salvation, and
right.
that's not so. So works, salvation is completely accomplished without works. Abraham, in Romans 4, is said to have believed God, mm-hmm. and it was accounted to him for righteousness. In fact, Paul goes on to say there, if either works or grace, it can't be both. They're mutually exclusive concepts. If it's works, it's not grace. It's grace, it's not works.
And here's the thing that I find so interesting about Paul talking about that in Romans 4, is he's using an Old Testament example
yeah.
to preach what we would call New Testament truth,
yeah.
which only leads me to believe that this is the way it's always been. It's never changed.
Yeah.
People do not come to God in their own way. Even the sacrificial system, the things that God instituted were only there to point them to
right.
the way.
Right. I was teaching Sunday school class this past Sunday, and one of the things I pointed out was I've been reading through the Old Testament biblical system, and I look at all that and I say, what in the world? I mean, you got to do this to be ceremonially clean. You can't touch that. If you touch it, you got to do this to get clean. And I think, my goodness, what did that say? It says the impossibility of being clean.
Mm.
You know, you think of the requirements they had. Well, it's just humanly impossible. Paul calls it a burden too heavy to be borne.
Yeah.
And so
it showed them their need.
We need somebody that could do it for us, and that's what Christ did.
The Messiah. Yeah.
It's completely accomplished.
So we also realize that works and grace are mutually exclusive from each other when it comes to salvation.
Right.
They cannot be together in that process. However, your next point, which I'll just kind of lead us into that, salvation is conscientiously accompanied with works.
Yeah.
It's a completely accomplished apart from works, but it's conscientiously accompanied with works. What does
yeah.
that mean?
And I say, we say conscientiously because it is something we conscientiously do, those of us who follow Christ. James makes it clear, a faith unaccompanied by works is a dead faith. It's not a saving kind of faith. He says that in chapter 2, verse 17 of his letter. And he says to those that are listening to his letter, or who will hear his letter, he says, you say that you're going to show me or demonstrate to me your faith without works. I'm going to demonstrate my faith with my works. Faith, works are a demonstration of saving faith. They demonstrate that the faith is real. That's the relevance. They are not the fruit, the root of salvation.
Right.
They are the fruit of salvation.
Right.
They are not, you know, we use a cliche, don't get the cart before the horse, but that's exactly the thing, theologically and soteriologically and savingly. The issue is faith that produces works. And so,
because you have a changed heart.
Yeah.
Your heart has been completely changed. Whereas before, which we have no time to go into this, but the whole issue of depravity plays into this.
Yeah.
And the fact that before that you had no heart to do good works.
Right.
Now
right.
your heart has changed because of the work of Christ in you.
Which God in the Old Testament promised that he would do. I will give you a new heart. I take out the old heart of stone.
Yes.
And I'll give you a new heart. And you will follow after me. Yeah, it's a totally different motivation than trying your best to do the best you can so that God will accept you.
So we've defined what works-based religion is. We've talked about the place of work in salvation, which is not what people might think it might be in the
right.
sense that works brings
it
us
is
to
relevant.
Salvation. It's relevant,
yeah.
but it's not the root.
It's not the root.
It's the fruit, as we talked about, according to the reformers of old. Now, in our remaining time here, I think this is where the application comes into is the subtle deception of human works.
Well, you know.
Why is it so subtle?
Yeah, it is subtle because sometimes the line can be blurred between the work that comes out of salvation and the work that produces salvation. But we have a sort of a moralism among Christian denominations that can become the same thing as a saving faith and a Christian walk. Moralism, which imposes some sort of system of work, some good stuff. Maybe it can be socially good things, it can be ethically good things, you know. And these can be equated with faith. They're not the same thing. There are a lot of people out there who do good stuff who don't know Christ.
Hmm.
And being moralistically right, as the rich young ruler seemed to have, you know, I've done all these things from my youth, it wasn't enough. He wasn't committed to Christ. He did not have a saving faith.
So what you're telling me is that the issue, at the root of what the rich young ruler was not his stuff. The root was his heart,
yeah.
and the fact that he thought everything he had done brought him and made him acceptable before God. And God's no.
His faith was in himself and in what
yeah.
he had done in his works. His faith was in Christ. And he just tried to turn that on its head by saying, well, you lack one thing. You go sell everything you have, give it to the poor, come follow me. And one thing he lacked was a faith that would cause him to follow Christ no matter what.
Right.
And that's a saving faith. And then there's this whole concept of moral influence. Some believe, and it can be a subtle thing among evangelicals as well, that Jesus died, he was a great example.
Right.
And his death on the cross was the ultimate example. And we need to follow his example. You don't get saved by following Jesus' example.
Mm.
In fact, you won't do it anyway. But people do not get saved by following the example of Jesus. He did not live to set us a moral example that would save us because we lived and followed that moral example. So moral influence is a concept. And then there's just the whole thing of, sometimes it's so subtle that people, well, works don't save me, but they keep me saved.
Mm.
You know, now there's a tension there because we know that works show are a proof of salvation, but we don't work to prove we're saved. That work comes out of a heart that loves God. It is motivated by a love for Christ. And Paul dealt with that in Galatians when he said to the Galatians, oh, you foolish Galatians, have you been saved by the Spirit and now you want to be made complete by the flesh? You think if you do all these works of the law that you're going to be okay? You're under a curse. You're trying to live a law that you cannot live. The just shall live by faith.
And I think it's interesting because I've been involved in situations or opportunities or organizations to where we would preach that we're saved by faith and
mm-hmm.
not works, but we didn't live like that. Which
yeah.
lead me to believe, did we really believe that?
Mm-hmm.
And
in your
I really
mind,
have
it's like
that.
If you didn't do certain things,
right.
you weren't right.
Right. There was something not right with you, which I it's interesting how subtle this really can be.
Mm-hmm.
That the gospel and the destruction of the purity of the gospel can be so intertwined into evangelicalism that we don't even realize it.
And we need to ask ourselves, am I working to gain God's acceptance, or am I working because he's accepted me?
Mm.
I'm accepted in the beloved. My works come out of that glorious truth that I'm accepted. I am in standing with God. He loves me, gave his son for me. I am his. He has sanctified me and ordained that I should go and walk, bear fruit. My fruit should remain, and that he's got works laid out for me, planned for me to
right.
walk in. I want to walk in those works.
Yeah, and it's almost this idea that because we lack our understanding of true sinfulness and who we are and the original sin, that somehow the things that we do would be better than what God has done.
Yeah, there's no value. That's dead work when you think of
yeah,
it. Yeah,
and somehow that what I can conjure up to, quote, please God, is still not enough. Even the best thing that I can think of is
or
not
as,
good enough.
Or as Isaiah said, filthy rags.
Yeah. And we all know the connotation for that.
That's a pretty significant thought.
Well, obviously we were out of town here, but we want people to understand and know that there is a place for faith and works, but knowing the order and
biblical order is very important.
And how subtly it can be destroyed. Well, thank you for joining us today. We look forward to being with you next week. Crosstalk is a production of Vision for Living Ministries. This is a free resource, but if you would like to support us, you can do so by visiting visionforliving.org/support. For more information on Vision for Living Ministries, visit our website where you will find other resources, including our blog. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/V4L. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at info@visionforliving.org or send us a message on Facebook. Join us next week on Crosstalk, the gospel for today and beyond.